Welcome to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet, every Monday and Thursday evening, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That is subject to change, but we've had that slot, these two slots, for several years now, I believe. You can also listen to this show on Podomatic. You can listen to it on TalkShoe, Amazon, Spotify, and probably about a dozen other platforms. And we occasionally upload the interviews to YouTube. I'm here solo tonight, but if it wasn't, you could go to our YouTube channel anyway and check out some of the great videos we've had over the years. This show is brought to you by Camp Constitution, which, among other things, runs a week-long family camp, a weekend ladies retreat, and a weekend family camp. This year's week-long camp runs from July 17th to the 22nd at the in Plainfield, New Hampshire. And to learn more about our camp and our weekend camps, ladies retreat, visit our website, campconstitution.net. Well, folks, we have much to talk about in the next 30 minutes or so of this show. The first thing is obviously the war in Ukraine, between Russia and Ukraine. I'm kind of interested. We see a lot of videos, a lot of footage, and I think I just learned that a New York Times reporter was killed today or yesterday, and that's unfortunate when anyone is killed. But one of the things I'm wondering is that how come the Ukraine has not launched an attack on the Soviet, or what used to be the Soviet Union, or Russia? It looks like a purely defensive battle. I'm just wondering if they have the capacities to maybe put an attack right on the Russian homeland. I don't know. I know Russia has a very intricate surface-to-air missile network, but we'll see. But this is what I find very fascinating. The American left, you know, I'm 63, and so as long as I can remember, when I became sort of aware of things in maybe the late 60s, early 70s, as a 9 and 10-year-older, there's always these people that have made apologies for Russia, for the Soviet Union. There's been all these organizations that have promoted friendship with the Soviets. They used to have student exchange programs. I remember, actually, it was actually in the early 90s when the Lexington, Massachusetts had exchange programs with the Soviet students. And all the lefties were just gushing over the wonders of the Soviet Union. I think Life magazine had a feature. It was, I think, 50 years of the Bolshevik Revolution, 1967 maybe, or it was at Fort. Anyway, well, they took over in 1917. And they were just praising the Soviets and the Russians, that they wanted peace, that everything was hunky-dory in that country. And we had aid and trade programs. I remember all these détentes with Richard Nixon, and then Henry Kissinger giving, under the Nixon administration, giving the Russians the technology to merge their missiles. And I noted in one of the some of the footage I watched the other day, I saw a truck, and it was KAMA. And I believe that is a truck that came from a Kama River truck factory. Well, guess what? Who funded that? Yeah, the United States. It was the biggest diesel factory at that time in the world. And it was funded by the U.S. taxpayer. And what I understand is that the first trucks that rolled off the assembly line, the first engines were put in trucks that made their way to the invasion of Afghanistan. but then something happened, you know, in the mid-90s. Oh, Gorbachev, he was a big hero. You could just do a search for articles about Mikhail Gorbachev, and it was nothing but gushing over this man. This man that booby-trapped toys of the Afghani children, were blowing their fingers off and blowing their arms off. And he was just praised as his great hero. Pizza Hut ran commercials. He was doing commercials for Pizza Hut. Then he had, so I think he still may have some kind of environmental entity in the Presidio in San Francisco. I know he did for a while. Then there was something just like overnight, and the left is very masterful of this. Overnight, they can switch gears. They did that back in the 1930s. The communists were very much against the Nazis. And then they signed a non-aggression pact. with the Soviets signed a non-aggression pact with the Nazis. They became allies. And all of a sudden, the anti-Nazi stuff ended. Nazis did the same thing, of course. And then about a year and a half, 2 years later, Hitler invaded the Soviet Union. Then all of a sudden, the Nazis were the bad guys again. In fact, there was a big movement to get us in the war prior to Pearl Harbor. And a group called the American First Movement came online. And these were mainly made up of patriots who loved America and were constitutionalists. But they did have a few Nazis, pro-Nazi and pro-communist or out-and-out communist elements within a very small percentage of the American First Movement. But as soon as the Nazis invaded the Soviet Union, bingo, let's have a war, second front now. So they're very clever folks. I've been putting up on my Facebook page, and I'm going to be doing an article on our blog. And I had one. I've done this in the past, but I'm going to update it. There was an author, Professor Anthony Sutton of the Hoover Institute, California, and he was not a believer in this kind of the idea of a conspiracy. But he did meticulous research into how elements in our country supported, gave aid in trade, technological transfers. And basically, the West, mainly the United States, built the Soviet Union to what it was at its height of its power. And he wrote exhaustive books on it. He wrote Western technology, national suicide, how U.S. technology has built the Soviet Union, the best enemy money can buy, and several others. And some of these books it's not exciting reading because it's a lot of details of different companies and what the companies were selling or giving to the Soviets. In many cases, it was funded by the U.S. taxpayer. And most of these books are available. In fact, we just got a large batch of books donated to us, and there were some of these books are included, and they're up for sale on our Amazon page. And again, these books are not out of print, and some of them are relatively inexpensive. And I think it's important. We also have a speech by Anthony Sutton. He did, I think it was in 1973. I think the book National Suicide was just published. Now, Sutton was supposed to be a keynote speaker at the Republican Party convention in Miami, 1972, until they found out what he was going to talk about. He was going to talk about how the U.S. Aided and traded and built the Soviet Union. Well, that didn't sit well with the neocons. In those days, they didn't use the term neocon. They were more Rockefeller Republicans or limousine Republicans. These were the internationalists and the globalists that worked pretty much with the Democrats party members, the globalists and the Democrat Party. At that time, not all Democrats were globalists. Well, that's changed. They are completely, totally in the camp of the globalist, where the Republican Party is probably maybe 20%, a lot less than since the days of Trump. We get people on people like Romney and, of course, Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham. These were the internationalists. When you look at their voting records, they might do the right thing on occasions, but by and large, the international so-called community comes first. So I think it's very important to point this out, folks. Putin is a bad guy, no question about it. What he's done is totally wrong. And see what the media is trying to do is trying to portray the conservatives, the Republicans, as pro-Putin. You know, all of a sudden, they're using the term treason. Now, treason is when you violate a country. In order to be guilty of treason, you have to be loyal to a sovereign nation, or supposed to have loyalty to a sovereign nation. So it's aiding and abetting the enemy of that country. That's what treason is. These same leftists that hate the concept of borders and sovereignty, they despise sovereignty. But when it works in their favor, they'll cry treason. I think the American people are, I don't think they're buying into it. Yes, we feel bad for what's happening in Ukraine. I'm still in the habit of saying the Ukraine. I don't know at what point that was changed. I think when it was a province of the Soviet Union, we called it the Ukraine, but now it's So anyway, so I think, again, I think you should look into some of these books and its information. You can just put a search on YouTube. You should be able to find our video of his speech, National Suicide, and other organizations have posted this information. So it's not like we have a monopoly on it. And it's not a secret. It's just that not enough people know about this, and they they get caught up in the headlines, and and they just pretty much believe whatever they hear. But for years, the left has championed the Soviets in Russia, and maybe the last 15 or 20 years they've changed a bit. Although let's look at Hillary Clinton giving Putin a good chunk of our uranium fields. And she was rewarded by a speaking engagement by her husband, Bill. I think they got $500,000 to speak. Gee, that's probably like $10,000 a word, right? And this won't be investigated anytime soon. And there's also what they call a hot mic moment when President Obama, he was running for re-election, his second term, and he said he spoke to the president and of the Soviet Union at that time. I mean, of Russia, and he said something to the effect that when I get reelected, if I get reelected, or when I get reelected, I'll have more, I'll be able to get more done. In other words, I'll be a lame duck. I don't have to worry about facing reelection. So the idea that the Democrats have been opponents of Russia is a lie. They've been in bed with Putin, and we can't forget the what $3 million that Hunter Biden got from the mayor's of Moscow's wife. I don't know what he did to get $3 million, and all that stuff comes out on the laptop, which is supposed to be Russian disinformation. Yeah, but it's not disinformation; it's truth. And more and more, again, it's these will things. These things will come to light as more and more information is made available. The sad thing is that the mass media, the deep state media, the fake news, they just won't report it. So you'll get some of this information. It will be out. You even may have members of Congress holding hearings. Unfortunately, holding hearings doesn't necessarily lead to anything. It just looks good on YouTube. It might help certain members of Congress raise funds for their reelection campaigns. If they're a good congressman, hey, well, good luck to them. All the best to them, I should say. Also, I've discussed this book in the past, but I want to bring it back, especially in light of the critical race theory, CRT. It's a book called Brainwashing, and it was one of the books in the batch of books that were donated. And it's still available on Amazon. It hasn't been squashed yet. Again, there's a lot of great books that were published in the last 50 years, 50, 60 years ago, that are unknown to most Americans. They weren't censored in the strict sense of the word. They just were ignored. And that's really a form of censorship when the book reviewers and the various entities that review books and sell books just sort of ignore it. But this book came out, it was written by Edward Hunter, Brainwashing from Pavlov to Powers, talking about Gary Powers, the pilot that was shot down by the Soviets in the, I think it was in the 50s. And but most of it was published in 1956, and I think there's been some revised copies over the years. I believe that the author Edward Hunter was the man who coined the term brainwashing. But a lot of it has to do with what the Chinese communists did to the American POWs. And he has a chapter entitled The Negro as POW. Now, I want to qualify this, by the way. The term Negro was a generic term back in the 50s. It was not an insulting term. Today, it might be construed as that. And he pointed out how the communist Chinese, who were the ones doing all of the brainwashing with our American POWs on behalf of North Korea, it was interesting that they were doing their utmost to get the prisoners to hate America, to turn against them. And they thought, well, the Negro, the blacks would be more receptive to denouncing their country. But they had a lot of trouble. They discovered that the most blacks were not anti-American. And they would show them, film clips of lynchings and Klan rallies and things of this. And pretty much to a man, there's been a few exceptions, but they said, look, the past is the past. This is our country. We're hoping for a great future. They didn't hate America. And I believe, so I would say this is the basis of the critical race theory. It's communist inspired. Communists try to get people to hate the country. If they want to take over a country, they will do their utmost to get people to hate that country, fill us with disinformation, fill us with lies. And this is what has been done. You can look at all these anti-American history books that we've discussed. We had Mary Graybar on the show once or twice, and she was at our camp talking about the 1619 Project and the critical race theory. And the critical race theory is basically getting people to hate the United States because of the belief that it's racist, that all white people are oppressors, and all black people are victims. And there's really no way around it. It will always be that way. Whites will always be racist, and blacks will always be victims, etc. And it's a way to destabilize the country. And they've been very successful at it, unfortunately. But I think there's more and more of us, and I still believe that there's more good people in both major parties, by the way, that have goodwill towards each other. They don't want to destroy each other. They still love this country. Although I just heard about a poll saying that most Democrats would not defend this country if it was invaded. That doesn't surprise me one bit. I don't know what the percentage is. But I just reread this chapter. I'd love just to reprint this chapter on the Negro POW. And it was interesting, too, about the characteristics of the that are brought out here. And Ed Hunter actually interviewed some of the black prisoners of war and when they came home. And he got their, got their perspective, and they even formed a group. There was actually a group, and I got to do some research on that. In the prison itself, in the prison itself, they had a group, and when they got out, they survived, and it was called the Golden Cross Club. It was just a way of showing their that they weren't conforming to the communists. It was also another group of officers that were not buying the propaganda, and they so at some point they just left them alone. I can't remember the name of the group. It was named after the man. He was a major, I think. And they just figured, nope, these guys are too solid. We're not going to have any influence over them. But what it did point out too, it said that the whites, no, there wasn't any broad brush, but the whites were denied certain things that they were used to, obviously, growing up, and some of them were middle class and affluent. And when the Chinese communists, those that were doing the brainwashing, they would give them little things, little pieces of candy, and they were so grateful for that. And when they got the little piece of candy, they were sort of, okay, well, I'll tell you, I'll say whatever you want me to say. I just so grateful to get this. And it said, well, the blacks didn't really have that type of experience. So that type of brainwashing conditioning wasn't very effective. So again, I recommend it. Brainwashing by Edward Hunter. There's several other books with that same title, but Brainwashing from Pavlov to Powers, Edward Hunter, highly recommend it. Now, I have a copy of the March 14th New American Magazine. It's a twice a month publication, and newamerican.com. And it's not a special issue, but it has a lot of articles, what really happened January 6th. And I probably will try to get maybe one or two of the authors, William Jasper, who's a former colleague, an old friend. Actually, I think most of the articles in this there's like six articles about this issue, about the January 6th so-called insurrection. The first one, what really happened January 6th, to Democrats and fake news media, questioning the 2020 elections must be equated with treason, sedition, insurrection, domestic terrorism, and white supremacy. There's that term, white supremacy. But there was one article. Did agents, provocateurs incite J6 violence? And armed insurrection was another article, and bipartisan hoax. So, yeah, there was some violence there. There's no question about that. There was a rally, and there was hundreds of thousands of people, and I've had a lot of my friends were there. I was in the middle of a move, and I had really no time to go down there. I don't think I would have went down there anyway. I had a lot of friends that did, and there was a bus not too far from, I think it was in Rochester, New Hampshire, a busload of people went down. They went down overnight, and they got out. And most of the people had the rally. They listened to Donald Trump, and they went home. That was it. Some of them took a walk to the Capitol, but most of the violence happened during the speech. And it mentions some shady characters in here. And it was interesting. Trying to get his name. One of the characters had a military background, a Marine background, and they didn't really mess with him. You know, he was encouraging people to go into the Capitol the night before. And in fact, you'll see videos of people saying, hey, he's a Fed, he's a Fed. So they called us a Fedsurrection. And then the guy who was dressed up as the Viking with the horns, and he was supposed to be some kind of shaman. He probably wasn't too, maybe not of sound mind, I would think, what he did. And there was another guy that grabbed Nancy Pelosi's podium. I mean, and he was, I think he was given 4 or 5 years in prison recently. And they said, what were you going to do if you saw Nancy Pelosi? He said, oh, I would have wanted to get a picture with her. That's what, he wasn't going to hang her or kill her or anything like that. There was no evidence. Nobody had any arms. There was none of these protesters, or I should say those who engaged in the violence, you know, fighting with the police, the Capitol Police. There was actually a Black Lives Matter guy there leading the fray. Let's see. His name was John Earl Sullivan, a.k.a. Jaden X. And he was a Black Lives Matter Antifa saying, we got a blanking rip Trump out of that office. It's time for revolution. He was one of the first pro-Trump protesters to breach the Capitol January 6th. That's interesting, huh? There's the Proud Boy head, and there's a lot of information. I didn't want to comment because it's just not enough information that I have one way or the other. The guy who called, I mentioned the QAnon shaman, Jacob Chensley, a.k.a. Jake and Jelly. He was chosen by the media as the face of the J6 insurrection. He fits the profile of mentally unstable people that Democrat dirty trick strategists Bob Creamer and Scott Fovell say they hired to infiltrate Republican events and cause trouble, including violence. And then Ray Epps, he was the man who the night before had a bullhorn. He was saying, we need to breach the Capitol. And during the event, he was out there on his bullhorn doing the same thing. And he seemed to get scot-free. He was, I think he was eventually did speak to the this January 6th panel, which is really nothing more than a kangaroo court. Ray Epps is the most prominent individual on numerous videos seen urging on in leading rioters on January 6th, while over 700 protesters have been arrested, including MAGA grandma tourists. Epps has been protected and dropped from the FBI's wanted list. And Merrick Garland is questioned about it, he says, well, I can't comment. It's an ongoing investigation. He was asked if there were any FBI agents involved. Oh, it's an ongoing investigation. I can't comment. In other words, yeah, but I can't say that. So, and you know, you always have to ask the question, who benefits? Well, I'm of the opinion, and I think the facts are coming out about this too, that there was a number of states that had some serious voting irregularities. That's the official term, right? Irregularities. But Wisconsin, this article just came out about Wisconsin, and we know that Arizona, Pennsylvania, Georgia, and many other states too. And I have to say, Mike Lindell on frankspeech.com.org, he has his own media outlet now, and there's lots and lots of information, and it was just dirty. In Wisconsin, where they had these ballot harvesting, 100% of these people in nursing homes voted, even some people that were incapacitated, weren't physically able to cast a vote. And I think Wisconsin, some of these states where Trump lost, it was by such a small margin. You see, in a state like West Virginia, it's going to be hard to steal that many votes. And so they don't have to focus on West Virginia, but they know states where it's going to be close. It can be done. I know in 16, You know, the bottom line was that we know there'd be some stolen votes. It just has to be people have to go out and vote against Hillary and for Trump enough to make so stealing the election would be difficult. So, but today, if you say the election was stolen or there were some states where it was stolen, you're called, let's see, a white supremacist, and it's you're advocating the big lie. It's the big lie. It wasn't the big lie in 2016 or 2001 when Bush won by George W. Bush won by a tiny margin in Florida. And if it weren't for that, you know, Al Gore would have got elected, or in 2004. But it's legitimate if you're a Democrat to question the outcome. Hillary Clinton still says that Trump was an illegitimate president. He should have never won. It was stolen by Russia. And you can get away with that because you're a lefty Democrat. You're a globalist. But if you suggest that the 2020 election was not exactly sound, they'll tell you it was the most smoothest election in the history of the Republic. A history that where you had ballots, you had mail-in ballots for the first time. You had justices, state justices in Pennsylvania rewriting laws. These mail-in ballots showing up in the middle of, not the middle of the night, but about 3 in the morning, and 95% of them are all the ballots are only voting for one candidate, you know, Biden. Here in New Hampshire, where I live, it was interesting. Trump lost here in New Hampshire. It wasn't decisive. I think it was like 3 or 4%. I have to double check. But in that same time when Trump lost and the Republicans running for the federal offices lost, so we had two state reps. Two U.S. reps got reelected, two Democrats, and the Democrat senator got reelected. But at the state level, there was a major upset. The Democrats had the House, the state House, they had both the Senate and the House, and they lost it. And it was like a 56 vote switch. You know, I mean, in this House, there's 400 state reps, and the Democrats, I think, had a 26 or 27, not percentage, but a 27 or 26 majority. And that switched, you know, to the Republicans now have a 26 or 27 member majority. And the Senate, which is only 24, I believe, was 14-10 Democrat, and it became 14-10 Republican. And the Republican governor won pretty handily by a very large margin. So it's really hard to believe that a lot of voters came out and said, yeah, I don't like Trump. I'm not voting for Trump. I don't like him. I don't like his tweets. He's an arrogant so-and-so. Even though Biden is a total disaster, I'm just going to leave this blank. No, I don't think that happened. So anyway, that's why some states have tightened up their laws on the subject, and it drives the left crazy, and they're crying racism. In fact, more people voted in 2020 than ever before. Trump got an extra, 10 million votes? This is why you get more votes than you got in the previous election, and you still lose to a man who almost never left his basement during the campaign, a man who has a horrible history of lying. You know, he was vice president. I think Biden picked him because he thought, oh, you know, he's supposed to be old affable Joe, and maybe some of the whites who really were a little apprehensive about this radical Barack Obama, this radical Marxist, maybe they would feel a little better having someone like Joe. But anyway, we're running out of time here. I want to thank you for listening. You've been listening to Camp Constitution Radio with your host, Hal Shurtleff. This show is heard on WBCQ, The Planet. And to learn more about Camp Constitution, we suggest you visit our website, campconstitution.net, where you can find links to our YouTube channel, our calendar, because we have a lot of events coming up. In the next week, a couple of weeks, we're going to be up in Maine again, and we've got things going on a regular basis. So until next week, may God richly bless you.